That evening, after Jack had cleaned and gutted the fish, and Will had analyzed the meat and deemed it safe, or at least free of any detectable toxins, Jack skewered it with a long stick and held it above the fire to cook. Surprisingly, it smelled fairly appetizing during preparation. Will decided that it would be unwise for them to eat more than one new item at a time, and that they should each eat something different. That way, if one of them got sick, the other would still be well enough to take care of them, or at least be alive to tell about it. Will had generously offered to let Jack be the first to eat the fish, since he had been the one to catch it, and opted for the berries he had collected as his evening meal. Jack cut off a piece of the fish meat, inspecting it on the end of his fork for some time, before putting it in his mouth and chewing it.
"How is it?" Will asked.
"Not bad," Jack said thoughtfully, still chewing. "A little tough." He finished his first mouthful, swallowing it down with a drink of water. "It's kind of bitter and a little stringy. It definitely takes some getting used to." He cut another piece, willing to eat almost anything at this point. "What about your berries?" Will looked at his bowl of purple berries. He had washed them vigorously, paranoid about any alien bacteria that might be on their surface. He would have preferred to cook them first, but this would be something they would carry with them on their journey to eat on the trail, and cooking them wasn't part of the plan. Will picked up one berry, holding it between his thumb and forefinger for inspection.
"Well, here goes nothing,"
he announced, as he placed the berry ceremoniously into his mouth. He bit down slowly on the berry, squeezing it with his teeth until it burst open with a slight popping sensation, squirting sweet nectar into his mouth and onto his tongue.
"Mmm!"
It was soft, succulent, and sweet.
"These are great,"
he exclaimed, as he picked up a few more and popped them into his mouth.
"I sure hope these don't kill me, because they're delicious."
"Great," Jack congratulated him, as he took another bite of his fish. For several minutes, they devoured their food, shoving the next bite into their mouths, before they had finished the previous one. 5 minutes later, their plates were clean, and their bellies full. It had been a simple meal, but a very important one. It meant that they might actually survive this ordeal. It gave them ideas and inspiration, but more importantly, it gave them a chance. Hopefully, it wouldn't give them indigestion. The next morning, Will ate the rest of Jack's fish, and Jack ate some of the 10 nuts that Will had collected. The nuts, they had decided, probably would need to be roasted in the future, but for now, they were edible. They spent another day by the pond, testing various specimens of plant life that Will collected. Jack caught another fish, this time using a stronger pole. It was a smaller variety, of a different color and fin configuration. This one Jack named a yellow-tailed two-striper, and the one from the previous night he named a tri-tail, for its three-fin tail. On the third morning, they broke camp and headed deeper into the jungle, carrying as many of the safe nuts and berries as they could fit in their packs. Their plan was to meet up with the river they had seen from the top of the cliff and follow it across the jungle. They could fish along the way for their dinner, all the while looking for an easy place to eventually cross the river. Over the next few days, they covered very little ground. The jungle was much more difficult to traverse, and most of their time was spent collecting possible food sources and testing them. They had ruled out countless varieties of plants, finding far more of them toxic than safe. And of those that were not deemed toxic, less than half of them tasted good enough to eat. But Will kept a careful record of every sampling in the datapad along the way, and within a week, they had a more than adequate assortment of culinary treats. The next step would be to try combining them into different entrees. This seemed a waste of time to Jack, finding simple preparation far more practical for their situation. But Will was determined to try, finding it an interesting challenge. Frank woke up feeling strange. He opened his eyes as the first light of day spilled through his tiny window, illuminating his narrow berth with the warm amber light of dawn. He rubbed his eyes for a moment, noticing that a slight perspiration had accumulated on his forehead. His ventilator was on, and it was blowing cool air, not warm, just as he preferred. But still, he felt overly warm. He sat up in his berth, bowing his head slightly to avoid striking it against the overhead. Whoever had designed the berths must have thought that everyone using them would be less than 180 centimeters tall, a damned inconvenience that Frank cursed almost daily. He noticed that his stomach didn't feel quite right. A little queasy, maybe. Not really enough to be called nausea, but not exactly normal. Sarah had been on cooking rotation last night, and although she was a skilled agriculturalist, her culinary talents left much to be desired. Deciding it was probably Sarah's cooking, he headed for the bathroom. An hour later, he was picking at his breakfast. Laura had the breakfast duty this morning, and she was quite adept at food preparation. She had prepared several loaves of bread the day before, using the wheat Sarah had cultivated over the last 2 weeks, using a fast-growing genetic hybrid developed on the Daedalus. Unfortunately, the meal Laura had prepared this morning, while delicious, wasn't helping his stomach problems. His work assignment today was indoors, which would leave him close to the bathroom if the need should arise. He had considered consulting Maria about the problem, but decided against it for now. Maria was overprotective as it was, and he didn't want to give her another excuse to mother him any more than she had been since his near-drowning experience nearly a month earlier. Jack and Will had depleted their supply of portable food and thus chose to take a day off from their journey to collect more. As usual, Jack took the role of hunter, spending the day trying to catch small game. They had been eating fish nearly every night for over a week now, and he longed for something different. Will was content in his role as gatherer. It left him free to leisurely observe the environment around him rather than rush through it as they did while hiking. He had even taken to dictating his findings along the way into a digital data recorder. He had realized early on that their journey exposed them to a greater variety of organisms than could be observed from one location. Someday, the information might prove valuable to future explorers of this world. Today's gatherings provided a few new testable varieties, although Will preferred to stick to those that they already knew were safe. Jack, on the other hand, seemed to prefer variety to safety. He had pointed out that it might be worthwhile to field test a wide selection of edibles, since there was no telling what might be available along the way. It was a valid point, but arguable nonetheless. Will had been gathering for over an hour and needed a break. He wandered farther from camp than usual and used up most of his drinking water in the process. He decided to refill his canteen from the river not 50 meters away, since it was considerably closer than the camp. The water had proven safe thus far. Although they had been boiling it as a precaution, he knew it was probably unnecessary. And Jack had already drunk the water straight from the river on more than one occasion, without any ill effects. Will found his way to a small clearing along the river's edge. The sun felt warm on his neck, after wandering under the jungle canopy for so long. It was an experience he enjoyed, feeling the energy from the nearby star warming his body, even though he knew that it was really the feeling of radiation showering his body. Squatting on the riverbank, he carefully dipped his canteen into the water, watching as the air escaped from the submerged container, rising to the surface in a stream of bubbles. Once the bubbles had stopped, he lifted the canteen from the water and brought it to his lips, taking a long, cool drink. The chilling river water was far more refreshing than water that had been boiled sterile and left to cool overnight. They had abandoned testing the water, unless suspect, realizing that their supply of testing materials was limited, and they needed to save them to test potential food sources. So far, the water on Tau Ceti 5 had proven safe to drink, as long as it was not stagnant. Will pondered the thought as he dipped the canteen in again to replace what he had drunk, before replacing the cap and returning it to the holster on his hip as he stood upright again. Never would he have imagined himself taking such risks, or jumping in the deep end, as Jack put it. Suddenly, Will froze, staring across the wide river at the opposite shore. He hadn't seen it at first, the color of its fur nearly identical to the blue-tinted bushes behind it. But there it was, staring back at him with a strangely intelligent gaze. It was at least 2 meters tall, bipedal and humanoid in form, with long arms and legs that, although slender in overall appearance, looked to be quite muscular. Its blue fur glistened in the sunlight, its head resting atop a short, meaty neck, and covered with long hair of similar coloring. They both stood there for nearly half a minute, each studying the other in amazement, each trying to decide what the other one was, if they posed a threat to one another, and how they should react. Then, as if it had made its decision, the creature squatted low, assuming what looked to be an aggressive posture to Will, who chose to back away slowly to avoid provoking it. Even though it was on the other side of the river, Will hardly felt protected by the vast, rushing body of water running between them. He continued his careful retreat, not turning his back to the creature until he was well within the tree line, at which point he turned and broke into a dead run. Will quickly wove his way through the jungle, jumping over obstacles and ducking under low-hanging branches with a grace and skill he hadn't realized he possessed. His breathing became rapid and shallow, both out of fear and exertion, as he made his way back to camp. It wasn't until he was nearly within visual range of their campsite that he remembered the weapon he carried on his hip.
"Jack!"
he yelled as he approached the camp.
"Jack!"
There was no answer. A few moments later, he arrived at the campsite, but Jack was nowhere to be found.
"Jack!"
he repeated at the top of his lungs, spinning around to holler in all directions. By lunchtime, Frank felt a little better. The uncomfortable sensation was still with him, but he had gotten used to ignoring it. He attributed his subsequent headache to the hours he had spent studying aerial recon images of the valley and terrain scans Tony photographed using the remotely operated drone, a small remotely operated quadcopter less than half a meter long, outfitted with a digital camera and several sensors that gave them the ability to accurately chart the area without having to survey it from the ground. The task at hand was to develop enough of an understanding about the area to choose the best colonization site. And although a computer algorithm recommended potential sites, the final decision was left to human reasoning and thus required detailed analysis of all the images. After lunch, Frank decided to see Maria about his ailment. As expected, she collected blood and urine samples for analysis and conducted a full physical examination just to be safe, promising to get back to him. In the meantime, she gave him something to ease his symptoms. Will heard something in the distance, something moving.
"Jack!"
Will called out as he heard something approach. This time, he drew his weapon, unsure of who or what was coming.
"Is that you?"
"Of course it is,"
Jack answered as he arrived at camp to find Will pale and out of breath. Even more surprising was the fact that Will had his pistol drawn.
"Were you expecting someone else?"
"You're not going to believe what I just saw,"
he exclaimed as he reholstered his weapon.
"It was at least 2 meters tall, Jack. It was covered with blue hair, with long arms, and was looking right at me, like it was trying to figure out what I was."
"What are you talking about? What did you see?"
Jack couldn't understand why Will was so panicked. It was not the first creature they had seen during their journey, although, by Will's description, it might very well be the largest.
"You don't understand,"
Will insisted, as he sat down to rest.
It was bipedal, Jack. It was humanoid."
Now Jack was confused as well.
"Was it intelligent?"
"I don't know. It's not like I had a conversation with it."
Will thought about it for a second.
"But now that you mention it, I'm not sure. Maybe there was something."
"Something?"
Jack interrupted.
"Like what?"
"Something in its eyes. Not like an animal's eyes, at least not like any of the animals in pictures and movies. I don't know."
"And it saw you?"
"Oh, yes."
"And it didn't do anything?"
"No. Well, it was on the other side of the river. It just looked at me, like it was trying to figure me out. Then, after a few moments, it looked like it was angry or something. That's when I decided to leave."
"Can you show me where you saw it?"
Yeah, I guess so."
The last thing on Will's mind was going back to see it again.
"Let's go."
Will jumped up from his seat, still full of adrenaline from his encounter, and headed quickly back into the jungle.
"Whoa, slow down," Jack advised. "Let's not run right into its arms, Will."
"Sorry,"
Will apologized, slowing his stride. For once, he was actually glad that Jack had required him to carry the damn thing. His hurried trek back to the camp after the encounter was far more direct than the wandering course he had taken during his gathering expedition. In a short time, they found themselves at the same tree line near the riverbank, staring anxiously across the wide river, scanning the area for any sign of the creature.
"I don't see anything, Will."
"It was right there, by those rocks."
Jack used his visual scanner to get a better look, carefully examining everything in the area.
"Well, whatever it was, it's not there now."
"It was there, Jack, I swear."
"I believe you, Will.
Look, there's a broken branch and water marks on the shore from where it probably exited the river. And there are tracks higher up on the bank, like footprints."
Jack put the scanner down, using his naked eyes to scan the overall area again.
"It looks like it went up the bank to the left and into the trees," Jack surmised, handing the scanner over to Will. Will scanned the area. He never would have thought to look for such indications, despite his scientific training and education.
"So, what do we do now?"
Will asked, as he handed the scanner back to Jack.
"There's not much we can do."
Jack rose from their hidden observation point in the bushes to return to camp.
"I'll tell you one thing, though. I'm certainly going to build a bigger fire from now on."
The medication Maria gave Frank had helped, reducing the sensation to only an occasional discomfort. She found no abnormalities in his blood or urine, and his physical examination had proven unremarkable. Still, Maria was concerned, and ordered him to return for repeat labs every day until the situation was resolved, just to be safe. That night, Frank slept fitfully, thrashing enough to awaken Maria in the berth across from him. Startled by the noise, she climbed out of her bed and rushed to Frank.
"Frank?"
she whispered at the curtain to his berth, not wanting to wake the others.
"Are you all right?"
She could hear him tossing and turning, moaning incoherently, and eased his curtain open, peeking in as she slid it aside. She watched for a moment as Frank's head thrashed back and forth, his hands occasionally flailing from side to side, while his legs and torso shifted under the covers. Suddenly, Frank sat bolt upright, startling her, and causing a short, muffled scream to leave her lips before she could cover them with her hands.
"Jesus, Frank! You scared me!"
she said, in surprise. Frank was so dazed and confused, he didn't notice Maria standing at the foot of his bed. Maria's hands dropped from her mouth.
"Frank?"
She noticed that he was covered with sweat. His face was pale, and his eyes were full of a fear that she had never seen before. He was panting, and his eyes darted about frantically, as if he was trying to understand where he was and what was happening to him.
"Frank, you're soaked,"
she whispered. Maria looked around to see if anyone else was awake to help her. But everyone was still asleep, exhausted from a hard day of work. Frank continued to look around nervously, trying to get his bearings. His pulse was racing, his mind spinning. He could hear someone speaking, but he couldn't understand what was being said. His mind struggled to focus on the sound of the voice, to try to determine where it was coming from. He was seeing, but the images didn't make any sense to him. Finally, he managed to focus his attention on the voice. It was coming from right in front of him. There was someone there, someone standing at his feet, someone with dark hair, someone with a soothing voice. It was a woman, Frank realized, someone he knew. Then the image began to solidify. Gray-green eyes, tan skin. Maria reached out her hand, seeing a spark of coherence in Frank's eyes.
"It's okay, Frank. You're all right."
The woman was calling to him, telling him something, but he still couldn't make out what she was saying. He could hear the words, they just didn't make any sense. But he felt like he could trust her, and put his trembling hand into hers, where it hovered in front of him. He could feel her gentle grip, tugging at him with encouragement, urging him to follow her.
"That's it, Frank. Come on out. You can do it.
Maria noticed that Frank's feet were trying to walk, even though they were under the covers and not on the floor. She pulled the covers off of him to make it easier. He was still wearing his work clothes. She continued to tug at his hand, urging him to climb out of his berth, wanting to get him to the med lab, where she could take care of him properly. But his incoherent condition made it difficult. She continued to speak gentle, encouraging words to him, hoping to bring his mind back from wherever it had been before this moment. Slowly, Frank seemed to regain some semblance of control over his body, managing to climb to his feet and stumble toward her. She caught him before he fell, nearly losing her footing in the process. Frank collapsed, draped across Maria's right shoulder, his arms dangling down behind her back, as he tried to stiffen up his legs to support his own weight.
"Come on, Frank, stand up," she begged him.
He was a big guy, not stocky and muscular like Mac, but much larger than her nonetheless.
"That's it,"
she coerced, as his knees locked and his torso tried to straighten.
"There you go."
Frank turned to his right at Maria's urging, his left arm now hanging around her neck, dangling over her left shoulder, his hand bouncing against her as they stumbled forward toward the med lab. He was beginning to understand where he was again. He tried to speak, but could only mumble incoherently.
"Jack?"
he asked.
"Jack's not here, Frank. It's me, Maria."
"Jack? Where's Jack?"
"You're on board the LRV, Frank. Do you understand?"
Frank looked around as they made their way forward. He recognized the habitat as they passed through it.
"What's going on?"
Lynn asked as she pulled the curtain of her berth back from the inside and peeked out.
"Frank!"
she exclaimed, noticing the awkward way he was hanging on to Maria for support.
"Help us,"
Maria told her.
"Mac! Tony!"
Lynn called as she climbed out of her berth. Within moments, both of them were out of their berths and full of questions as they flanked their friend and helped him to the med lab. Once in the lab, they eased Frank up onto the exam gurney. His breathing was still shallow, and his skin was cold and clammy.
"Tony, put him on the high flow,"
she ordered, as she began attaching various sensors to Frank's body, flipping on the biomonitor and adjusting the settings. His blood pressure was up, and his pulse rate was sky high. As Tony placed the oxygen mask on Frank's face, she quickly drew another blood sample while Frank was still delirious. Maria wondered if he had experienced some sort of seizure, even though she suspected it was nothing more than a bad dream, probably coupled with a low blood glucose level, since he hadn't eaten very well the previous day. Frank's eyes closed once he was supine again, but now they were beginning to open, fluttering at first. The light was low, but he could see Maria working in the corner of the lab.
"Oh, so you're awake?"
Maria commented, after turning around.
"How did I get here?"
Frank whispered, from behind the oxygen mask.
"We brought you here," she explained, as she stepped up to his bedside. "You were thrashing around so much, you woke us up. When I checked on you, you were incoherent, pale, and sweaty. You scared me half to death."
Frank closed his eyes again.
"I guess I was having a bad dream."
"I'll say. Care to talk about it?"
she asked, gesturing to the others to leave the compartment.
"It was about Jack,"
he began, opening his eyes again and staring at the ceiling.
"He was struggling to survive out in the wilderness, trying to find his way back to us. It was cold and windy, and he was weak and hungry. He was calling out to me, begging me to help him."
Frank looked at her again.
"Oh, it was so real."
She could see the pain in his eyes. He was battling the guilt within himself.
"You know, Frank, there was nothing that you could have done when the Icarus went down. You know that."
"Do I?"
"Jack chose his fate, Frank. He knew the risk he was taking, and he knew he had to do it. That's the kind of guy he was."
"Oh, I shouldn't have let him go down there, Maria."
"You couldn't have stopped him. None of us could have. The sooner you realize that,
the sooner you can get over the guilt and get on with your life.
Oh, and how am I supposed to do that?
I'm not sure. It's different for everyone. I do know that first, you have to want to get over it.
You think I don't?
You tell me.
What do you mean?
I've been watching you mope around, feeling sorry for yourself, like you're the only one who suffered a loss. We all suffered a loss, Frank.
Oh, you don't pull any punches, do you?
Only when I have to, Maria smiled.
Anything else?
You have to forgive yourself.
Maybe you're right,
Frank sighed. And until you do, you're probably going to continue getting ill.
So, you think my symptoms are psychosomatic?
Maybe.
I see.
Frank was a little surprised at her diagnosis. He had never thought himself the type who could become physically ill because of stress. But then, it seemed he was learning a lot about himself during this mission.
I'll give it my best, Doc. Now, when can I get out of here?
He asked, as he pulled the oxygen mask off his face.
Well, your vitals all appear to be back to normal, and your blood glucose isn't dangerously low, although I do suggest that you eat something before you go back to sleep. We don't want you to go through this again.
Quite right, he agreed, as he sat up.
Maria lowered the rail on his bed so that he could hang his feet over the side.
How do you feel sitting up?
Oh, fine. A little weak, maybe.
No dizziness?
Nope.
Okay, then.
Frank looked at her for a moment.
Thanks, Doc.
It was my pleasure, she smiled.
Frank slowly scooted to the edge of the bed and stood up, pausing to make sure he was steady, before heading for the door. Jack noticed that the hair on his arms had become lighter in color, taking on a pale, almost blonde tint over the past few weeks. In fact, after Jack brought the subject up, Will commented that Jack's own overall hair color had grown a tad paler. After consulting the Survival Encyclopedia, they decided it was probably due to prolonged exposure to sunlight, something that none of them had ever experienced. But Jack had noticed something else. He had become leaner and more muscular. He had been in pretty good shape most of his adult life, working out regularly in whatever gym was available to him at the time. But it wasn't the sort of transformation that one would expect from vigorous exercise. Instead, it was more of a change in definition, leaving his muscles leaner, yet more defined. And he had noticed a similar change in Will as well. He decided that all the physical exercise they'd been getting was causing the transformation in both of them. But there was another change, one that could not be so easily explained. It was mental, and brought him a strange pleasure. He felt more alive, more conscious of his place in the vast world that now surrounded them. Perhaps it was the result of prolonged living in the outdoors, or maybe the fact that he was in better physical shape. Maybe his recently forced change in diet even had something to do with it. Whatever it was, he was enjoying it, as their journey through the jungle was beginning to feel easier. Jack sat by the fire, watching its amber light dancing among the underside of the trees. After their adventure at the river, Jack returned to find that he had successfully snared a small animal he referred to as a rabbit, due to its similarities with the Earth versions that were raised on the Daedalus for consumption. Slaying it had been relatively easy. His mere presence had nearly scared it to death. Will, on the other hand, had expressed considerable remorse at the killing of the defenseless creature. But Jack, in his desire to eat meat once again, had no such compunctions. It had even been rather tasty. Even Will, who had also grown tired of fish and berries, enjoyed his portion of the Setian rabbit meat, and now he too sat by the fire, satisfied by the evening meal they had just finished.
"What are you doing?" Jack asked, as he noticed Will carving away at a fat stick.
"I'm whittling."
"I know you're whittling, but what are you trying to make?"
"A recorder."
"A what?"
"It's a musical instrument, kind of like a flute."
"I've never heard of it before. Where did you learn about that?" I used to read a lot when I was young. Anything I could get my hands on.
Jack was intrigued. No one had thought to bring any sort of musical instruments on board during their ancestors' hasty departure so many decades ago. And since there had been far too little resources on board to create them, most of their music was either recorded versions brought from Earth or digital music created by the computer programmers with too much time on their hands. The idea of creating music manually, using a handheld instrument of some sort, seemed terribly foreign to Jack, even though he knew that music had been one of the few things common amongst all of Earth's cultures throughout human history.
I didn't know you could play an instrument.
As far as Jack knew, no one on board the Daedalus knew how to play a musical instrument.
I can't, Will admitted, but I thought I might give it a try.
Oh, really? That's going to take some time, isn't it?
Time is the one thing I seem to have plenty of these days.
That, Jack decided, was certainly true enough.
So, how does it work? Well, if I remember correctly, it should be a hollow tube with a fipple at one end to create the sound when you blow, and it needs to have several holes spaced at proper intervals to make up a musical scale.
How do you know where to put the holes?
I've seen pictures of them before, and the holes looked like they were fairly evenly spaced. I figure after I make the first two holes, I can measure the change in pitch using the resonance scanner on the data pad, and then calculate the rest of the holes from there.
I never would have thought of that, Jack admitted.
I imagine hollowing it out is going to be the hard part.
Jack rose, going over to his backpack. He pulled out the tool roll and produced a long, slender screwdriver and handed it to Will.
Maybe if you can find a way to sharpen up the tip of this, it might work for you.
Will examined the implement for a moment, weighing its possibilities.
Thanks, Jack. This just might do the trick.
Jack excused himself and went to his tent to turn in for the night. Will continued to whittle for several hours, turning the fat stick into a near-perfect column before retiring to bed. As he lay in his tent, waiting to fall asleep, he realized that, for the first time, he had failed to make an entry into his journal. But he was tired now, and his hands ached from the hours spent carving.